This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
Queer Stories is a beloved live show where folks from every bit of the rainbow come together to share their serious, sad, and sometimes hilarious stories. The show is an incredibly successful podcast and even a book. It's the brainchild of writer, former performer, comedian, and general good egg Maeve Marsden. Nick Hines caught up with Maeve to talk about the show and how she got into running Australia's most beloved Queer Stories Night.
Maeve Marsden, you seem to do everything in the media industry, writing, hosting, directing, performing. You've done it all.
It's almost like the arts are underfunded and you have to be able to do everything in order to make a living.
But back in 2016, you did start Queer Stories,
yes,
which is an absolutely magical little night every month. It brings together so many diverse writers and members of the queer community to just tell whatever story they want to tell. Can you tell us about the impetus behind it, like where it all started?
Yeah. So, I mean, as you said, as a creative, I've always done loads of different things. And my approach has always been, if I have an idea, to try it out. And if I like it, keep doing it. Or rather, if audiences like it, I keep doing it. So back in, I think it was 2015, 2016. I was curating a program called Late Night Library for the City of Sydney, and it was arts events in libraries after dark, and I was given King's Cross Library to curate, which is right bang in the middle of where the first Mardi Gras was. So when I was putting together a program, I thought, well, I should be celebrating queer histories, and especially in a library, which is this place of kind of the public record and of listening and of quietness and learning. I just thought, what a lovely space to explore some of the stories of, at that time, Sydney's kind of queer history and individual kind of members of that community. And yeah, people really responded well to it. And I just kept it as a really simple format, 6 personal stories. And the more people liked it, the more I kept doing it. So I moved it to a bigger venue and started doing them interstate, which brings me to Melbourne. And popping them on a podcast, and before I knew it, there was a book. And that sort of sounds like I stumbled around. Obviously, I was strategic with it and wanted to grow it. But these stories, I mean, I was brought up by lesbian mothers, so this community's history is my culture, like it's my history. And so a chance to share those stories and to bring people together to listen to each other's stories really fits with the kind of night I would want to go to. So just making arts events I would want to go to myself. And now it's massive. Yeah, I reckon I've done like 50 or 60 events. There's more than 150 stories on the podcast. I'm about to do one, my first international event at Ubud Writers Festival in Bali.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's really exciting. All the capital city events have sold out, but some of the regional ones, you only get maybe 50 people. But for those 50 people, it's really beautiful. And often at regional events, you get younger people coming along with their families, and that's quite something. So even though I love me a sold out event, there's something in a small event that's quite beautiful too.
And obviously, coincidentally, it started just before the same-sex plebiscite did kick off, just over a year later. How was it conducting Queer Stories events across that period?
I mean, interestingly, I think the tagline on the book is there's more to being queer than coming out and getting married, or than coming out in equal marriage. And for me, I really wanted Queer Stories not to be about that. So, of course, it was referenced. People talked about it. We've had some really funny and, you know, political and complicated stories about that time and about that campaign. But I felt at that time that a lot of the media about marriage, coming from both us and from the opposition, was quite simplistic. It was really like, love is love, you know. And it's like, well, also, love is complicated, and it's not, you know, like, we don't have to always present this kind of really sanitized front. And for that campaign, we did. So I wanted Queer Stories not to be about that, not to be about campaigning, not to be about, you know, cleaning up our image so that we were palatable to conservative voters. So I think maybe the campaign had a positive impact on Queer Stories' growth, in that people were looking for a community event and are looking for a place to come together in that sense. But I definitely didn't steer the events towards that at that time.
And it sort of seems that just the format of the event and its nature is quite antithetical to online sphere. And I know obviously a lot of queer communities come together online and Twitter can be fantastic for all that. But at the same time, Twitter, Facebook, social media in general, and the 24-hour news cycle, it's not the same way of story, not as good for storytelling in some ways, and can remove nuance and sort of elements of the debate. Do you find that it's important to have that sort of space where everyone comes together?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm quite a political person and I'm very online and I love kind of engaging in what's happening. And some of the stories that get performed, people do sometimes write something last minute that responds to the politics of the time. And if big events happen, I refer to them as host. But funnily enough, with this event, I really try to steer people towards the narrative and the personal. Like I say, it's an arts event first and foremost. And that's not to say that I don't think community events and political stuff is not extremely important, but I wanted a space that was about the craft of writing and the craft of storytelling. And I think LGBTQI plus people are really amazing creatives. I think that there's something about the act of coming out and the act of being other that gives you a perspective on the world that can lead to a particular kind of edge to our creativity. So I wanted it to celebrate queer creativity and queer culture and queer writing. So I really do brief people. I'm like, I don't want spoken opinion pieces. I don't want political campaigning. I want a story about you that is like gentle and intimate and specific and personal. And that's just for this event. And I think that's worked for people because it means that the stories are unique as the individuals that I program. And it means that it's every event's quite different as well. I don't theme them. I don't tell people, all right, we're doing a comedy one this month. So it's about steering often between quite serious to quite lighthearted pieces all in the one night.
The diversity of every panel is impressive, I guess, especially when you see so many other panels on so many other issues. What sort of is that? How deliberate is that process?
It is deliberate. I think as a white person, and I mean, obviously the diversity that a lot of people refers to, that I program a fair amount of people of colour and First Nations storytellers. I also make, I program a lot of trans people, which not all LGBT events unfortunately do. Sometimes it's really token. It's deliberate because I think it makes the events more interesting. Because if I only program other white lesbians in their 30s, of which I know loads, I could program people who look like me till the end of time. And you know, like half of us appear to be stand-up comedians. But if I don't do that, it's not just about the quality of the events, it's about audience and growing an audience. And it's hard to talk about like diversity without it becoming super corporate and being like, oh, hashtag diversity, I'm doing it because it's so important and I'm a good person. And it's not. It makes my events better and it makes my events more interesting to have different types of people. And like we talk a lot about, diversity and cultural background. Age diversity is really important to me, trying to find storytellers from, different generations so that we're getting different perspectives. I think intergenerational kind of community and sharing in the LGBTQI plus community is really, really important for our own politics and growth. And I think as well, a lot of arts events or comedy events, you see the same people kind of performing at them over and again. I have a rule that except in really rare circumstances, like if someone cancels, I won't book someone until a year after they've last performed so that I'm not putting the same kind of comics and the same faces up over and over again. I'm like, because sometimes people will really enjoy it and they'll be like, when can I do it again? I'm like, contact me in a year. Because I think that way, I think it's my job to keep it interesting. Mm. I don't think audiences owe me the ticket purchase, so I have to make the events worthy of their time and money. And that's kind of one of the ways I do it. And it's fun for me. Like, I have to read all these stories. If I'm just reading really samey stories, I'll get bored. So it's a way of keeping my job interesting.
Are there any sort of standout specific examples of stories that either completely changed your worldview or just stuck out as like incredible moments?
Yeah, I have some faves. I shouldn't, but I do. A lot of my favourites end up being ones that aren't about sex or love. And I think we often define a queer story as being when we see a romantic pairing on screen or stage. And a lot of them for me are about moments where queerness is inherent to who we are, regardless of who we're sleeping with or falling in love with. So Emma Valente, who's a theatre maker in Melbourne, wrote a gorgeous piece where she kind of juxtaposed dating fails, for want of a better word, with her developing a friendship with this kid who lived in her apartment block. So that was more about kind of like parenting and loneliness and kind of navigating complicated relationships. And then more recently, Cadence Bell, who's a woman based in regional New South Wales, who's currently making a documentary about her and her partner both transitioning at the same time. She was booked for Mudgee Readers Festival and I'd never heard of her, and she sent an incredible piece of writing, just moving and witty and like gentle in its approach and to the subject matter. And yeah, I've booked her now for Sydney and I'm going to try and get her down here as well because it was a really great piece of writing. So yeah, I could talk about my faves for ages.
Do you wish that something like Queer Stories was seen by the broader community, or are you happy? Yeah,
it's not for them, and I don't think it has to be. I'm not interested in doing awareness training. I tried to do corporate awareness training a couple of times. I was terrible. Like, if someone wants to pay me a lot to do it, I will say yes, but I was not good at it. I'm not super interested in the straight community as an audience. I am for my other work because it's part of my income stream, but for Queer Stories, I think we do a lot of performing for them, for straight people and for cishet community. We do a lot of kind of accept me, you know, love me. And I think if people writing their stories for Queer Stories thought they were writing for a straight audience, they do a lot more educating. And I still spend a lot of time steering writers away from that, going like, you don't need to do what is bisexuality 101 at this event. Like, assume that the audience is not biphobic. They might be, but assume that they're not so that you can just barrel ahead with your personal story. And that's just kind of one example. But yeah, if it was a straight audience, and straight people have come. I've gotten emails from straight people who've booked a ticket because they were curious or because they knew someone on the bill or picked up the book because they wanted to learn, and it's blown their tiny minds. But that's not my sort of target audience, and I don't want people to have that in mind when they're writing. I want it to be by and for community. And there's enough difference between us as the individual subsets of the community that people are still going to learn and see people who aren't like them or don't share their experience or their politics. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really care about straight. I can say that on this radio station.
Absolutely. What's next then?
For me?
Oh, yeah, for you, for Queer Stories, for everything.
I'm looking at the moment at ways to make it a platform for queer writers. So what I'm interested in is not necessarily just doing heaps more of the events, though I'm going to continue to do them, but going, well, what other kind of creative avenues for queer writers can I provide? So I'm in the very early stages of working on an application around a screen project. I'm personally trying to write a play, so I'm interested in kind of theatre and things like that, because I think, yeah, Queer Stories is a community event and the live aspect is really important and the coming together is really important. But now I've got this trove of stories and by some incredible writers who I didn't know were out there and who are not necessarily published. So ways that I can convert its reputation into a platform where en masse we have more kind of power, where it's not the individual writer's audience but the audience of Queer Stories and the audience of all of it together. If that can get funding and paid work and creative work for some of these people who I've now been lucky enough to connect with, that's my kind of next goal with it. So I'm looking at a few different ways to do that and collaborating with some cool people. So that's kind of its next goal with that show. Yeah, and for me personally, yeah, trying to write a play that's a lesbian divorce farce. I keep reassuring my mothers that it's not about their divorce, but they're a little worried. It's not. Their divorce wasn't quite farcical, so it's all going to be much more extreme than that. So I'm writing that and still touring my cabaret shows and all the other stuff I do.
But, a million things you do.
Yeah, but writing is kind of what has always interested me about Queer Stories. Like, what are these stories? What's the craft here? And what can I do to support people who've written something amazing to get it to its next life or the next stage of audience.
Amazing. That was Maeve Marsden.
Queer Stories is running shows all over the place. To keep updated on when shows are happening near you, follow the Queer Stories page on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.